He came to the house and he was charming. He was wonderful, and my family had a lot of faith in him.
What was Elvis Presley like then?
He was insecure. He was, you could talk to him as a person. You knew who he was. You knew his fears. He had, he was so vulnerable. He was gentle. He was fun. He was a person you could really deal with.
Hi, everybody. My name is Shauna, and this is the American English Podcast. My goal here is to teach you the English spoken in the United States through common expressions, pronunciation tips, and interesting cultural snippets or stories. I hope to keep this fun, useful, and interesting. Let's do it. Hi, everyone. We're here again today with another expression episode. As usual, there will be two parts to this episode. During the first section, I'll go through the expression music to one's ears, I'll tell you a joke, and we'll do pronunciation exercises. In part two, you'll get to hear the very fascinating life story of Elvis Presley, the king of rock and roll. In the introduction, you heard a snippet from an interview by Barbara Walters with Priscilla Presley, who was Elvis Presley's long-term girlfriend and wife at the peak of his career. As you heard from the audio, Priscilla explains what Elvis was like in their early days together. She used some adjectives like insecure, vulnerable, charming, wonderful, gentle, and fun. Of course, like many idols, fame and fortune is life-altering. The story of the ups and downs of Elvis's life is very interesting, so stay tuned for the second part of this audio to hear about it. Let's begin with part one, and I'll start by telling a joke. Are you ready? What do you get when you throw a piano down a mine shaft? Any ideas? A flat miner. Do you get it? A flat miner is not just a musical scale, one that can be played on a piano. We also say that notes are flat when they're out of tune. So if you throw a piano down a mine shaft, you might get a whole minor scale that is out of tune. A flat miner also can mean something else. A mine is a hole, an area of earth that's been excavated, where individuals called miners can enter and extract rocks, minerals, coal, and other natural resources. If you've ever seen Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, you might remember the dwarves whistling while they worked in a mine. The dwarves were miners. So if you drop a piano down a mine or down a mine shaft and it lands on a miner, right, the individual, you might get a squished or a flat miner. So let's tell that joke one more time. What do you get when you throw a piano down a mineshaft? A flat minor. So we have the musical aspect talking about the flat minor scale and the flat minor, the individual, the worker that was crushed by the piano. All right, well, hope you enjoyed that. And let's move on to the expression of the day, which is music to one's ears. Let's go through the individual words first. Music, according to Oxford Dictionary, is vocal or instrumental sounds, or both, combined in such a way as to produce beauty of form, harmony, and expression of emotion. To is a preposition, and in this expression it means according to. So music to one's ears, music according to one's ears. One's is belonging or relating to people. Here we're of course talking about one's ears, so the ears that belong to one individual. And ears are the organ of a human body that enable us to hear and are important in creating a sense of balance within the body. In English, we use the expression music to one's ears when something is really nice to hear. It's often used to express that new information heard is good news. According to idioms.com, one of the early uses of the expression was from 1838 in writing by James Fenimore Cooper, who wrote, "The earnestness and passion with which the young man uttered his feelings made music to her ears." So hearing his feelings made music to her ears. In other words, it was very nice to hear. Nowadays, we don't normally say it makes music to our ears. We just use the verb to be. It is music to our ears. Let's go through some more examples just to ensure that you know how to use this expression well. Example number one, imagine that your good friend has been dating the same person for years and is ready to take her relationship to the next level. She wants to get married, but as more time passes, there is no proposal. Right? She's waiting on the guy to propose. She decides to take matters into her own hands and pop the question. He says yes. And of course, she tells you the news very excitedly. So you might respond, "Oh, that's music to my ears. You two are a perfect couple." Right? It's wonderful to hear. It's great news. Thanks for telling me. Right? Example number two. Imagine that you've had a long day at work and you're so hungry, you feel like you could eat a horse. When you walk into the front door, your roommate's there and tells you he just ordered a bunch of pizza, enough for everyone. You might let out a sigh of relief and say, "That's music to my ears." In other words, that news is a real pleasure to hear. I'm so hungry. I'm really excited. It's wonderful to hear that news. Example number three. Imagine that you have a family member who is sick and there's no remedy for the illness that they have. Now, what if one day you get a phone call from the physician letting you know that a cure has been found? You'd probably be elated, very, very, very happy, and tell him, "That's music to my ears. That's absolutely wonderful news. It's a real pleasure to hear it." So that's it for the expression. This is a fairly easy one. It's like saying, "Oh, it's wonderful to hear." Right? So let's move on to the pronunciation exercises. We'll start with the statement, "That's music to my ears." Repeat after me. That's music. That's music to my ears. That's music to my ears. In the conjugation, repeat after me. It was music to my ears. It was music to your ears. It was music to her ears. It was music to his ears. It was music to its ears. It was music to our ears. It was music to their ears. Did you notice how I linked words within the same thought group? The first group being, it was music. It was music. It was music to my ears, right? To my ears would be the second thought group. Words within a specific thought group are often linked together, so you'll hear a lot of reduced sounds within them. For example, to your ears. To your is reduced, right? We don't say to your ears. It's not separated. It's squished together. Your turns to your, to your ears. Same with her and his. You can barely hear the H at the beginning of these words. To her ears. To her ears. It was music to her ears. It was music to his ears. To his. This is common in spoken English. So let's move on to the story of the day, and this is about the life of Elvis Presley. Elvis Presley is the perfect rags-to-riches story. He was born in Tupelo, Mississippi on January 8, 1935, and he grew up in poverty. In fact, the Presleys were so poor that his mother couldn't afford a prenatal doctor or doctor during her pregnancy and the birth of Elvis. So she gave birth at home. And to her surprise, she was pregnant with twins. Jesse Garin, Elvis's twin brother, was stillborn about 30 minutes before he came into the world. Elvis always wondered what his brother would have been like if he had survived. In the mid-1930s, the United States was going through the Great Depression. It was a rough time period for all Americans. The unemployment rate was high, people were hungry, and relied heavily on food stamps and on free meals from soup kitchens to get by. The Presleys weren't much different. Elvis's father, Vernon, took jobs here and there, but without having completed high school, he found it difficult to secure an income long term. Once, in desperation, Vernon, quote, forged a check to put food on the table, unquote, and ended up going to jail for 6 months. Elvis was just a toddler, 3 years old at the time, and he and his mom regularly paid him visits there. The Presley house did not have running water or electricity. They lived in what was called a shotgun house, which was a popular, cheap form of housing in the South back then. Shotgun houses were no bigger than 12 feet wide and were long and rectangular. In order for the Presleys to go to the bathroom, they'd have to pop a squat in an outhouse in their backyard, which didn't really offer much more than just a hole in the ground. With Vernon back home after his jail sentence, the Presleys regularly started attending church. Elvis joined the choir and enjoyed singing so much that his mother gave him a guitar on his 11th birthday. That was to master the art of singing and playing together. Seeing Elvis's keen interest, the pastor of the church offered Elvis guidance while learning guitar. But it was outside of the church that Elvis's passion really started to take form. He took it upon himself to study finger movements of talented guitarists of the time. And whenever he could, he would find a radio to tune into. He'd listen to famous country artists from Nashville, Tennessee. Nashville, Tennessee was and is still known as the country music capital of the United States. That's when Elvis's obsession with music really kicked in, and he wasn't even in eighth grade yet. He'd bring his guitar to school and practice in his free time, and his classmates really didn't understand him. It wasn't until his family moved to Memphis, one of the big cities in Tennessee, that he was able to fully immerse himself in music. Memphis, after World War II, was a musical melting pot. Country music, bluegrass, and R&B could be heard in the entertainment district. And fortunately for Elvis, his parents gave him the freedom to explore it all. According to the documentary The Searchers, quote, Elvis was like Huck Finn exploring. At night, he would slip into black churches, he would listen to gospel music and the sermons, unquote. He loved seeing how intensely people would express themselves there. People stomped their feet and clapped their hands, and he'd join in. It didn't faze him that he was often the sole white boy in a predominantly black church. Segregation in the 1950s, after all, was the norm, especially in the South. None of the attendees seemed to mind, though. He came in peace and clearly felt at ease singing in the group setting. Singing solo, on the other hand, was another story. As a teen, Elvis was terribly shy. In fact, after he became famous, his Aunt Lillian admitted that he once forced guests at a birthday party to sit in the dark as he performed for them. It wasn't until he came first in a school talent show that his self-confidence started improving. That was his validation as an artist. And when reflecting on it in an interview, he said, "It's amazing how popular I became at school after that." At 18, Elvis graduated from high school, but unlike others, he didn't want to go to college. Music was his passion, and he would do anything to pursue it. That year was the first time he walked into a studio, Sun Records. Sun Records was where the well-known producer Sam Phillips could be found. The man who was recording the best R&B artists at the time. When entering, Elvis had one simple request. He wanted to record a song for his mom. $3.98 it cost him, but it was worth every penny. Recording in that specific studio meant that Sam might hear his voice and he'd catch a break. The idea was clever and the timing was just right. The woman who worked inside of the studio with Sam raved about the young boy's voice, and when Sam heard him for the first time, he saw potential. He'd been looking for a Caucasian or white singer to perform R&B. In the early 1950s, as I said, segregation was present in the United States, and it also existed in music. R&B, which stands for rhythm and blues, was considered black music. It could only be heard at clubs and private venues, and it was unlike anything else playing on the radio. The beats were fresh, and the songs elicited emotion. Sam was sure that if a white artist performed R&B, even a watered-down version of it or an altered version of it, it would be a commercial success. Elvis had the look and the voice of an artist, so Sam hooked him up with some professionals who could take his skill to the next level. They practiced as a group, and when they felt ready, they showcased their new material to Sam. It was a previously recorded blues song called That's All Right that left him speechless. Elvis had put a twist on it, literally. He shook his hips, danced around, sped it up, and made the song his own. And that was it. Sam immediately called the radio station and asked them to play it. And that was the first time that Elvis played on the radio. From there, his music career started falling into place. He also formed his image. He let his sideburns grow out and dressed like a star. At shows, he would shake his hips, and the girls in the audiences would scream at the top of their lungs. During his first years of popularity, about one-fifth of his songs were covers of songs previously released by black R&B artists. When he did covers of songs, he'd pick up the tempo, insert some country elements into it, and perform them on stage to ever-growing crowds. That mix of R&B with country was new in the South. It was called rockabilly, which is a portmanteau of the words rock and hillbilly. Some said it was just R&B with a white man's delivery. Either way, it was the beginning of rock and roll, and eventually Elvis would be dubbed the king. Soon enough, he had a $35,000 deal with Sun Records. That's more than any other artist was making at the time, and he was only 21 years old. He was driven for success, though, and released new singles every 2 months. In 1956 alone, Heartbreak Hotel and The Hound Dog came out, and they were two hits. Fame came fast for Elvis. He had a manager, but he had been hunted down by a vicious promoter named Tom Parker, often called Colonel Parker, who promised Elvis that he was the next big thing. He would especially be the next big thing if he went on TV. Back in the 1950s, there were very few TV shows in general, popular ones even less. When Elvis first appeared on TV, he shocked audiences. He was young, handsome, and his clothes were much tighter and more revealing than other artists at the time. When he sang, he gyrated. He moved his hips. A lot of conservative parents scowled at the sight of it, calling him Elvis the Pelvis. They ridiculed his over-sensualized dance moves and complained that he was contaminating wholesome music. Their daughters, on the other hand, drooled as they watched him dance across the screen. Even young boys started copying his greased back hairdo, also known as a ducktail. For many, his stardom seemed to come overnight. He certainly went from rags to riches faster than most. By 22, he bought his mom a fancy pink Cadillac and some for himself. He also bought himself a mansion called Graceland, and it's one of the most popular tourist destinations in the state of Tennessee today. Right after the start of Elvis's career, he was drafted to the Army. The draft, by definition, is, quote, compulsory recruitment for military service. Up until 1973, Any man in the U.S. between 18 and 26 could be drafted. In other words, selected to join the armed forces. Even though Elvis had already rose to fame, he wasn't exempt from being drafted. In 1958, his music career was put on hold, and he headed off to an American army base in Friedberg, Germany. There, he spent his day as a chauffeur for a sergeant, and at nights, all he wanted to do was have fun. One of the soldiers he knew gave him pills to stay awake, which he took gladly. He was just 24, and unfortunately, that was a precursor to some of the events that would later come in his life. While stationed in Germany, Elvis met a young American girl, Priscilla, who was 14 years old at the time. And despite their age difference, they fell in love with each other. Her parents were, of course, not so enthusiastic about their blossoming relationship, but they couldn't do much about it. They knew that if they kept her away from him, she'd only resent them as parents and rebel. So in 1960, Elvis moved back to the States, and shortly afterwards, Priscilla came too. For their first years together, she was finishing up high school, and he had a lot of respect for her. He treated her well, according to her. He wanted to marry her a virgin, and waited a total of 8 years to put a ring on it. In 1967, the two got married, and exactly 9 months later, their only daughter, Lisa Marie, was born. Life wasn't as smooth sailing as many thought it was for him at that time. He was busy. His manager, Colonel Parker, had him appearing in one movie after another, and he didn't really have time to work on music. Meanwhile, the Beatles, Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan, and other music groups took the scene and became wildly popular. He saw them as competition, and strong competition at that. He was only in his early 30s at the time, and his music already felt dated. He needed to have a comeback. It was early 1968. He worked out to burn off some extra weight he had gained, grew out his sideburns, like in the old days, and put on extravagant jumpsuits, some made of leather, some of them with sparkling gemstones. He went to Vegas, where he became a regular playing at various hotels. And ticket sales did incredibly well. It looked, from the surface, that he had recaptured his audience. It was a success, at least for a while. He was very busy and worn out, and this put stress on his marriage. In 1973, Elvis and Priscilla got a divorce, and from there it was a downward spiral for him. He was afraid to turn 40 and was unhappy with where his career was. Despite their separation, Priscilla continued to talk to him, but it was very difficult for her to cope with. He no longer took care of himself, and he was gaining a lot of weight. Milkshakes and fried banana and peanut butter sandwiches were his go-to. And on a side note, peanut butter and banana sandwiches are called Elvis Presley's nowadays. Although he'd had his fair share of sleepless nights in his 20s, they continued. Priscilla said in an interview, quote, "He had a fear of insomnia, and when he woke up, he had a horrible fear that he'd never be able to get back to sleep again." He had started taking pills to sleep, and some to stay awake, in his 20s, and it had become a vicious cycle that lasted throughout the years. Long term, the pills took their toll on his well-being, according to Priscilla. He started to miss his shows, and occasionally, he forgot the words to songs he'd performed for years. On August 16, 1977, Elvis was found dead in his bathroom. Doctors say the cause of death was a heart attack. Many believe it was brought on by the prescription drugs he was taking. Sometimes critics and fans alike focus on Elvis's sad and lonely ending. But as many famous musicians and Priscilla like to remind us, Elvis was not the same person during the last years of his life. Although it's impossible to ignore his pill addiction and his life story, it's also important to understand that he was a person, especially before the fame. The real him, the real Elvis, she said, was generous, wonderful, sensitive, and considerate. His songs are also a reminder of his contribution to music history. He was the king of rock and roll. Over 1 billion records of his have been sold worldwide. He's had 149 songs on the Billboard's top 100 charts in the US. He was in a total of 31 movies, three of the most famous being King Creole, Blue Hawaii, and Jill House Rock. Shows of his broke attendance records in venues across the US. And in his life, he received 14 Grammy nominations and won three in the gospel category. Elvis was a trendsetter, and he made music history. That's it for this episode. The information for this audio was taken from interviews with Elvis, also the famous Barbara Walters interview with Priscilla Presley, a book called Who Was Elvis Presley by Jeff Edgers, and a 3-hour-long documentary of his life called The Searchers, which is available on HBO. There are so many interesting facts about Elvis that I could have shared, random stuff like the fact that the only class he ever failed was music, which is kind of funny, or the fact that he bought around 200 Cadillacs in his life and would give cars and jewelry away on a regular basis. But I didn't really see how that fit into the storyline. If you are interested in music of that time, I definitely recommend listening to some of the early R&B artists in the US, like my favorite, Sam Cooke, The Drifters, and Ray Charles. You might also be interested in hearing some early rock and roll from Little Richard, Chuck Berry, The Coasters. Yeah, it's very different from today, but there are a lot of classics in there. So hope you enjoyed, and until next time, bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the American English Podcast. Remember, it's my goal here to not only help you improve your listening comprehension, but to show you how to speak like someone from the States. If you want to receive the full transcript for this episode, or you just want to support this podcast, make sure to sign up to premium content on AmericanEnglishPodcast.com. Thanks, and hope to see you soon.